Funding for this edition of Think Tank with Steve Adubato has been provided by New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT, makes industry-ready professionals in all STEM fields. EJI Excellence in Medicine Awards, a New Jersey Health Foundation program.
Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to create a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. The Fund for New Jersey.
The Terrell Fund,
a foundation serving children.
Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey.
The New Jersey Economic Development Authority.
Community Food Bank of New Jersey.
And by New Jersey Public Charter Schools Association. Promotional support provided by
NJ.com, keeping communities informed and connected.
And by
bestofnj.com, all New Jersey in one place.
Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. For the entire program, we're going to be talking with a physician leader who has made a huge difference in part of the world that a lot of us hear about but may not really understand the devastation, pain, and suffering going on there. He is Dr. Adam Hamowy, and he's a medical director at Princeton Plastic Surgeons and former United States Army combat surgeon. Dr. Hamowy, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
You have served as a medical professional, as a surgeon, combat surgeon, in a variety of war zones, including?
I've been in Iraq, I've been in Gaza, I was in Bosnia early on in 95. I've been around the periphery about the Syrian war and working with the refugees there for about 10 years or so.
So you've seen the worst of the worst?
Yes.
So we're taping on the 21st of October. There's a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. We don't know where things are going to go. We can hope and pray. That's actually not a strategy. Hope and pray. But doctor, we have you on to talk about what you saw, what you experienced, and frankly, what the people of Gaza have experienced are continuing to experience as it relates to the pain, suffering, the death and devastation that has gone on there. Please talk to us.
So, I mean, it's unfortunate that this has gone on for so long. And you know, even how you just kind of opened up and said there's a ceasefire with a bit of a doubt in your words, because unfortunately, that's what we've seen happen multiple times is ceasefires, you know, are in place, and yet despite the ceasefire we're seeing right now, people are still suffering, you know, and war, unfortunately, is always horrible wherever you go. You know, it impacts everyone that's there. It impacts, you know, both sides always. There's always like losses, but I've never been in a situation where I've seen so many civilians impacted in this way as I have in Gaza. Unlike my experience in other places, it's been a war that has really affected the regular people, regular men, women, and children. It's supposed to be, you know, fighters fighting each other, you know, armies fighting each other, or someone fighting a militant. But this has been a war against the people. And it's gone on so long, and it's been right in front of our eyes. And as Americans, it's hard to kind of see that this is something that we've allowed to happen under our watch, with our support, and with our full knowledge. And so this is what's been more disappointing about this than anything else.
Okay. So let me try this. We've had many folks on talking about, and again, it's the 21st of October, the graphic will come up, we don't know where things are going to be, how they're going to play out. But the events of October the 7th, 2 years ago, as we're doing this program, disgusting, horrific, indefensible, barbaric by Hamas. No disagreement, correct?
No disagreement.
Okay. But the thing you just said, Doctor, about we've let this happen under our nose, one of the things that has struck me, and I want you to talk about this because you don't see this from a geopolitical point of view. You don't see this from an ideological point of view. You see it from a very human point of view as a physician who cares deeply. And you also were in Iraq in 2004, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
You've gone to war zones consistently to make a difference. So here's where I'm going with this. It could be my sense alone, but I don't think I'm alone in this, that there's not enough empathy and compassion for the people, the civilians who have suffered. And I hate saying on both sides because that means certain things to certain people because they've heard that expression before. But Israelis have clearly suffered. But those in Gaza, particularly children, have suffered disproportionately and horrifically. Do you think too many of us Americans have closed our eyes? Keep it out there. It's not me. It's not my kid. I'm not even connected to the Palestinian community. So somehow we care less, or am I oversimplifying it?
Well, I think the problem is thinking about it as both sides. I mean, civilians are civilians. They're really people who just go about their daily life. They just want to live, you know? They want to go to school. They want to go to work. They want to put food on their table.
Which is what people were doing on October 7th at a music concert.
That's what makes it horrible, right? I mean, that's why we say it was horrible. There's people that are just going about their daily life, and that was a horrible day, okay? So if we accept that as the premise, okay, then it doesn't matter which side. And that's how we should be looking at it. Civilians are civilians. They should be left out of this. But October 8th onward, that's not what happened, because on the Palestinian side, they're civilians as well.
Say something.
Say something.
No, don't repeat after me. Say something. Say hi.
Say hi.
There are people who just want to put food on their table, go to work, go to school, live a happy life. We always say that we love our freedom. They want just to be free to live. And we have not accepted their position on this because we see this as one side or the other. But when you go there and you take care of these people, you see that they are just human beings. They're human beings that have the same dreams that we do. They have children that are completely innocent that have been born into one war after the other. And they measure time by the number of wars that they've gone through. And yes, as Americans, we have not allowed ourselves to kind of take that into account. We're basically saying that these are, whatever's happening is justified, which is not. One horror does not justify another. One crime does not justify another. And if we're also going to go on the premise that, you know, this was a war crime or done by terrorists, does that allow a nation state to also act in that same manner? Are we going to just follow that rule? Like, whatever they do, we'll do as well. Because then if we're calling them war criminals and we do the same thing, what makes us any different?
Describe what you saw, what you experienced in those hospitals in Gaza.
I experienced daily mass casualties. These mass casualties were, you know, indiscriminate bombings on people who lived in tents, that were living in civilian structures and in regular homes, that basically injured entire families and extended families that came in at a time. I mean, these weren't platoons that came in. This was, you know, a mother and a father with their children, with their uncles, and often their grandparents all coming in. And we're talking about blast injuries from bombs that were made to destroy bunkers that are falling on tents. A third of the people just dying on the site, completely destroyed and disintegrated, you know, many of them just buried under rubble. And whoever survived that was brought to the emergency room. And many of them just died there. And you know, it was not uncommon for me to have parents that lived and all their children were killed, or children, like one or two children that were alive that were injured in serious condition, and their entire family is gone now. Their parents, their uncles, you know, their grandparents, and they have no one else to go back to. And this was on a daily basis.
You went twice.
I went twice.
Why did you go the second time? Because after what you saw the first time.
Because it was clear that they needed help. And I had the ability to go. I mean, there's so few that are allowed to enter Gaza.
What do you mean allowed?
Not everyone could enter. I mean, even most Israelis are not allowed to go into Gaza. I mean, you talk to most Israelis.
Even today.
I mean, right now, the only people allowed, the only Israelis allowed are those that are, you know, Israeli like military and fighters. But you talk to most Israeli civilians, they're not allowed to go into Gaza. They haven't been into Gaza. They haven't seen what's going on in Gaza. But even like now, like international, like obviously journalists aren't allowed. The only people allowed are humanitarian workers, including physicians and nurses. And so because so few people are allowed to go, I mean, for me, I felt like it's an obligation. If I had the ability and I can go in, that I should. And especially since I have the skills to actually make a difference for a few people.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
The EJI Excellence in Medicine Awards was established in 1939, shining a light on New Jersey's healthcare leaders. Current awards include Excellence in Medicine, Research, Medical Education, and Community Service. EJI also funds annual scholarships to medical, dental, pharmaceutical, and physician assistant students throughout the state. Learn more at ejiawards.org.
I'm Tim Sullivan, CEO of the New Jersey Economic Development Authority. Since joining the NJEDA, I've been struck by the incredible assets and resources that New Jersey has to offer. The NJEDA is working every day to grow New Jersey's economy in a way that maximizes the values of those assets to benefit every single New Jersey resident. This includes more support for small businesses and a focus on reclaiming New Jersey's position as a leader in the innovation economy. Visit NJEDA.com to learn more about how NJEDA is building a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy.
What's going on today?
I'm filming a bunch of insurance commercials. So many mascots.
Yeah, I don't need my insurance company to have one of those. I just want them to be there when I need them.
Hi, here's your imported nitrogen-infused water.
Bubbles are too big.
I went to film school for this.
At NJM, we don't do mascots. We do what's right when things go wrong. No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. NJM.
New Jersey Institute of Technology has supported New Jersey businesses since 1881, when it was founded as the Newark Technical School. And through their partnership with the nonprofit New Jersey Innovation Institute, they're igniting innovation and delivering transformative products and services throughout the state. Learn more at njit.edu and njii.com.
Dr. Hamaway, you have your own family?
Yes.
Children?
I have four children.
Ages?
My son is 15. He's the youngest. And I have three daughters that are older, 19, 22, and 23 now.
What did you tell them after you came back the first time?
Be thankful for what you have. I mean, not just from this, from all my experience in the past, from traveling and going and to areas for natural disasters and war, we take for granted the simplest thing. Having food on our table, we always tell this to our children, but when you really are at a lack of even just regular food, having regular medicine, having like, you know, a roof on, like a real roof, and we're not talking about like a tent or, you know, a blown out house where you're like living with one wall and some tarps that are that's giving you shelter. These are simple things that we all have and take for granted that almost everyone in Gaza does not.
When you were going back the second time, doctor, were there people closest to you, or close to you, including family members, who said, don't go back?
Yes. even the first time of it, but like especially after the ongoing the second time, because of every month is worse than the month before. I mean, we've seen this just escalate over the last 2 years, and people here at home, my family included, say, I mean, you've done enough. And my response is that we haven't done anything at all. It's still these.
Do you really believe that? Do you really believe that you didn't do? When you say we, do you include yourself?
I do include myself.
What could you have done?
Stay longer, go more often, speak out more. Whatever we're doing, it's too little when you look at the price that's being paid.
Is it too late?
It's never too late.
Okay. Describe for folks what's left in Gaza now. What's there?
There's still people there. Okay. So there are human beings that are still there, men, women, and children. There's not much structure there. If you drive through Gaza, you drive through miles that looks like you're in a movie that's in the apocalypse. You see just destruction for miles driving on. And people like wonder are these shots that we see on TV? Is this just like a close up and you look to the right, everything is still standing? No, like you drive through this destruction that goes on and on. You know, some of the few structures that are still standing are, what's left of the hospitals. There's really no home that's been left untouched, but the people are still there and they need a place to basically live. This is their home.
So a 10-year-old kid or a girl going to school?
No, all the schools have been destroyed. They've had two universities, destroyed all the secondary and primary schools. None at all. So unless the parents are trying to teach them, which is hard to do because they're constantly moving. I mean, some people have moved 6 or 7 times already, at least.
Where are they going, Doctor?
Well, from one place to the other. So they have to evacuate one area. So they go from North Gaza to South Gaza. Then from South Gaza, they have to go to the shore to Mwasi. Now that's not safe again. They have to go back to North Gaza. Then you have to move to Central Gaza. It's, they're always giving evacuation orders and told to go somewhere else.
What about the mosques and churches? Are they safe?
Mosques, mostly all of them have been destroyed. Some are partially standing, some completely leveled. Churches, most of them have taken at least some form of damage, if not destroyed at all. Every single hospital in Gaza, and I think there's 30-something, has been hit and, received some sort of destruction and has actually been invaded and occupied at one point or another. And it's basically like playing whack-a-mole. They take out one hospital, it's out of commission, it's sabotaged and destroyed, and then they move on to the next one, and then the Palestinians move in and they try to rebuild it and make it more functioning again, each time to a lesser degree than it was before.
What about food?
Scarce. Scarce. When I was there, I lost 10 pounds and I was there for 3 weeks. And I had my own food. I had power bars with me and, they fed us like guests. So oftentimes at their own expense.
Are people actively starving right now?
Yes. They were actively starving last year in 2024. We're just seeing now a year and a half of this.
So yes, we're taping on the 21st of October, a ceasefire. Again, don't know how it's going to play out. Were any of your colleagues, medical colleagues, doctors, arrested?
No one was arrested.
None
that I traveled with. I know there's been many medical professionals over the last 2 years, but no one that I know or have traveled with has been arrested.
What do you believe, people watching right now? You don't have to ask. Just say it.
I'm making the assumption that you're asking about, Americans, foreign travelers. I mean, I would say my Palestinian colleagues, many of them have been arrested. And there's...
Why?
We would love to know why. There's been no really, explanation given. I mean, I could give you a list of names and the WHO and the United Nations and multiple humanitarian organizations have all...
WHO, the World Health Organization. You're saying Palestinian doctors have been arrested.
Right.
And you don't even know if they're out?
That they're still under custody. Many of them are being tortured because some have been released, and they've been released after torture. And we haven't heard from them. And this
but
is
there's a cease, but the ceasefire does not. What does the ceasefire say about what should happen to those Palestinian physicians?
Well, there have been requests to release them, and many of them are still in custody. I mean, they're
We haven't heard. Yeah. What would you say to those watching who argue that this has always been a battle against good versus evil, and the evil is Hamas? And Hamas did what it did on October the 7th, 2 years ago, as we do this program. And that, quote, everything after that. And again, like you touched on this earlier, but I want you to touch on it again, Dr. Hamawi. That after Hamas did what it did, the horrific, disgusting, barbaric things, and held hostages, innocent people, that everything else is fair game. It's good versus evil. And they are the evil.
But it seems that we're doing, you know, equally evil, if not more evil actions. So, you know, I think you just have to really examine yourself. You have to look at where your information is coming from and really do your own research. I mean, the information is out there. And there's a lot of talk about fake news, okay? But what, you know, I've been advocating, and we've all been advocating right now, is like, why are journalists not allowed to go into Gaza? Why are third party, you know, non-involved, you know, actors not allowed to go in and observe what's happening? We've been asking for this from day one.
And from whom? Who have you been asking?
We've been asking basically for the Israelis to allow third party observers to come in.
And what's the response?
Response is no. I mean, the only third party people there are the doctors themselves. And we've unanimously coming out and telling the story about what's happening. Same thing with the humanitarian organizations, and it's being dismissed by the Israelis. So, you know, Hamas is going to give their story, okay? And we could disregard it if we want to. But the Israelis are also giving their narrative and their story, and they have their own interests involved. So, like, I would dismiss that just as easily. Like, since when do we just take one side of a story? We need someone to go in there and take a look at what's happening. We've been providing this, but we're not professional journalists and, like, you know, third party monitors, and we're not going to investigate. We're there to provide care, and like our second job is to kind of tell the world of what's happening.
How have you been able to go back, given that you were there twice? You saw what you saw, you experienced what you experienced, you saw horrific, unimaginable suffering, devastation, death, destruction. How do you do what you do every day at Princeton Plastic Surgeons as the medical director? How have you been able to do that? I mean, I'm not your therapist, and my doctor is not in psychology, or say, obviously, I'm not a psychiatrist, but how are you doing what you're doing?
It's hard. I mean, it's honestly, it's changed my life. It's changed my priorities, and my goal is always what I could do next. When's the next time I could go? You know, I have an obligation to my family and to people who rely on me here. So I need to take care of them. But I have to go back.
You're saying you'd go back?
I would go back again in a heartbeat, yes.
So the ceasefire has not stopped the suffering, correct?
There is so much care now. I mean, there is so much suffering. There are people that have been injured. There's still people that are starving. They don't have the food that needs to go in. I was actually there when I went the second time. So the second time I went in January of this year was during that ceasefire. Okay, so I actually went in during that first ceasefire earlier this year.
January of 25.
Of 25. I had so much work because of all the backed up surgeries and care that hadn't been provided in the previous year, that I worked nonstop while the time I was there. The first day I was there, basically from 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night, I had a lineup of patients that needed to be taken care of. Whether it's because they had previous trauma that needed revisions and reconstruction, they had old wounds that had to be taken care of, I had children that had been born with cleft lips and palates that hadn't been taken care of for a couple of years now. And I had other people that had other things that just had been, you know, skin cancers, things that have been piling up that need to be taken care of. But because of all the trauma and what's been happening, had been just, you know, left and disregarded. So just because the war stopped doesn't mean they don't need care. Plus, we talked about the doctors that have been taken away. There's obviously people that had left early on, and there's people that have been killed. So their infrastructure for healthcare is gone. They need outside help. Doctors, nurses, just supplies for medicine. The work hasn't stopped just because there's a ceasefire.
Got a minute left. What could someone watching right now do if they wanted to be helpful?
We could donate. We could speak out. We could say to our representatives, listen, we don't want our tax dollars going to hurting and killing innocent civilians, no matter who they are in the world. We need to kind of look at our own values and our own morals and say, is this what we stand for? Is this who we want to be, you know, known as, you know, as the country basically that supplied and financed this genocide that's happening today?
You believe it is a genocide?
I saw that it's a genocide.
Dr. Adam Hamowy, who is medical director at Princeton, plastic surgeons, former United States Army combat surgeon. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate it, doctor, and wish you all the best and to your family as well and to the people you'll continue to help. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Got it. I'm Steve Adubato. We'll see you next time.
Think Tank with Steve Adubato is a production of the Caucus Educational Corporation. Funding has been provided by New Jersey Institute of Technology, EJI Excellence in Medicine Awards, a New Jersey Health Foundation program, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Fund for New Jersey, the Terrell Fund, a foundation serving children, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, the New Jersey Economic Development Authority, Community Food Bank of New Jersey, and by New Jersey Public Charter Schools Association. Promotional support provided by NJ.com and by bestofnj.com. To see more Think Tank with Steve Adubato programs, visit us online at steveadubato.org. If you would like to express an opinion, email us at info@caucusnj.org. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Steve Adubato PhD and follow us on X at Steve Adubato.
The EJI Excellence in Medicine Awards was established in 1939, shining a light on New Jersey's healthcare leaders. Current awards include excellence in medicine, research, medical education, and community service. EJI also funds annual scholarships to medical, dental, pharmaceutical, and physician assistant students throughout the state. Learn more at ejiawards.org.
I'm Tim Sullivan, CEO of the New Jersey Economic Development Authority. Since joining the NJEDA, I've been struck by the incredible assets and resources that New Jersey has to offer. The NJEDA is working every day to grow New Jersey's economy in a way that maximizes the values of those assets to benefit every single New Jersey resident. This includes more support for small businesses and a focus on reclaiming New Jersey's position as a leader in the innovation economy. Visit NJEDA.com to learn more about how NJEDA is building a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy.
Is this an action movie?
You're in luck, folks. They're filming a car insurance commercial today.
That explains the mascot.
Seriously, what does the shark have to do with insurance?
Stunt shark!
At NJM, we don't do mascots. We do what's right when things go wrong.
Okay, action!
Nothing blew up.
Cut!
No jingles or mascots, just great insurance. NJM.
New Jersey Institute of Technology has supported New Jersey businesses since 1881, when it was founded as the Newark Technical School. And through their partnership with the nonprofit New Jersey Innovation Institute, they are igniting innovation and delivering transformative products and services throughout the state. Learn more at njit.edu and NJII.com.